Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and you may remember that I am not typically a fan of romances, and most of the time I hate romantic comedies with a fiery hot passion, but I will make exceptions for those movies if they include elements of science fiction, fantasy, paranormal, or horror. I'm still waiting for a really good horror comedy, horror romantic comedy, so we'll just, you know, that's on the doorstep. But today we are talking with director and co-writer Greg Bjorkman, who is responsible for the new indie, I'm going to say time travel romance, Press Play. And this movie includes element, like I said, time travel. There's a romance story. That's the through thread. And oh yeah, it includes a kick-ass soundtrack. So welcome, Greg. How are you today?
Good. How's it going today?
So far, so good, because I get to talk to you about this movie, which turned out to be far, far cooler than I was expecting. I'm like, okay, another time travel romance. Oh, we'll give it a shot. Hey, this is pretty cool.
Well, I appreciate that.
So you co-wrote this in addition to directing it.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the development process.
So the original idea was given to me by Josh Boone. He and I were talking back in 2011 or 2012 about his career trajectory and how he became, you know, a director. And he said that he wrote his first one, and that gives you a little bit of authority when it comes to directing. And directing is something that I've always wanted to do. And then we started talking about music, and he said that he had this idea for a time travel romance movie that he just couldn't ever figure out. And he said, hey, if you can fix this, you can go make it. So he gave this idea to me, and I, you know, not having enough knowledge in how to create a story, sat on it for a number of years, and I got to witness really good films being made, like The Fault in Our Stars. And, you know, I had life experiences that I went through, and relationships myself that I went through, that coming into the end of 2016, I felt very prepared to sit down and write it. But because it was time travel, I knew that was going to be an extra challenge, because I knew the emotions, but I need somebody who is very good about time travel movies. So I asked a friend that I had worked on The Fault in Our Stars with if she knew anybody who loved time travel movies. And the first name out of her mouth was James Batchelor. And so we had dinner and chatted about the movie a little bit, and then started writing the next weekend. And that was a fun experience, because the thing that I like to compare like having a writing partner to is being a balloon attached by a string to another balloon, and that balloon is, or that string is wrapped around a pulley, and one of you gets to explore the sky and all these crazy ideas while the other one's grounded, and then you switch. So it was a fun time developing the script with him.
What was more important to get right for you as a writer, the soundtrack or the time travel rules?
Well, because it was a music heavy movie with time travel, they were both equally important. But I thought that, you know, if for example, there's a movie called About Time, and they do a really good job with the time travel rules, but there are holes and there's cracks, but they fill them with really good emotions. So when James and I wrote this, we set out to make sure that the time travel logic worked really well. And our time travel logic was inspired by Back to the Future, because we thought that was like one of the most iconic time travel movies of all time. And you know, we made sure that the time travel logic worked for it. But in terms of, you know, functionality, we had basically slots of time for each scene that was a time travel scene that we needed to put songs in. So we had to determine how long each scene was based on the song that we were including. And that song had to match the mood and the emotions of each thing. And then on top of that, it had to work for later in the movie when we had to go explore new emotions, new challenges. And they both, you know, they had to work. So we did have a challenge in front of ourselves on top of the time travel to make sure that the emotions worked and the songs worked. And so we did write songs into the track list or into the script to make sure that, you know, we were on track and doing the right thing for the movie. And a bunch of songs actually survived all the way to the end, like the Father John Misty cover of The Flaming Lips was in one of the original drafts. There was a song by Robin Kester that I found on Reddit that was in one of the original drafts. And then there's also Oh My Love by Riz Ortolani that was in one of the original drafts. All those songs survived through to the end because they worked so well in those scenes emotionally. And, you know, I don't know, for maybe you can answer this. What did you think of the second use of some of the songs? Did you feel like they worked in two different scenes?
For me, yes. I appreciated the way that the time traveled scene made sure to reinforce the echo of the song, that the mood was the same for Harrison, but there was an extra urgency to it for Laura.
Yeah.
And but it didn't clash with the mood that the song was setting for that scene. There was just an extra added undercurrent of it. And I admit, I kind of want to go back and see if any of the original scenes hint at a future Laura being in them. I have a feeling they don't, but I like looking for little things like that in genre films that give me paradoxes to enjoy and explore.
Well, I can tell you that you'll probably find a few, because we did try to make sure that those songs fit in two scenes. So, mm-hmm. with the hidden aspect being that you know, maybe if you rewatched the film, you might pick up on.
Oh, now I have a mission. So, you and James talk about your discussions of what the rules of time travel should be for this instance, because, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers, but Laura's the only one traveling through time, and mm-hmm. most of the people she talks to about what she's experiencing think she's having a mental breakdown, except for the owner of the record store, Danny Glover's
Cooper,
character.
Yeah.
And, I thought that was hilarious because his music, his store, and where they got the music is central. It's an anchor to everything.
Yeah. So, when James and I were originally discussing, you know, time travel and making sure that the logic worked, you know, we did look at, you know, Back to the Future, and maybe I'm misremembering your question, but our logic was to make sure that you know, we stuck to this almost a train track method, where you can keep going from one train track to the next through a switch at every single point that you change, you know, something in her world. And then, you know, at the end, you have to kind of figure out how to undo everything, if you will. So our logic is heavily based around Back to the Future, and you know, like I said about time. You know, we tried to fill in the gaps with motions if there were cracks, but I don't think that there are. Maybe you can find them if there are.
The one that I had a question about when it was coming around was related to the disappearance of the tape, because mm-hmm. the store burned down in one timeline. Yeah. And there, I guess I was like, did you have a framework for the internal logic of how this time travel, you know, slipping back and forth worked? And I thought it was interesting. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but each pivot point in the, I guess, in the attempt to save Harrison was mm-hmm. a scene that was connected to a song. And once that song was over, that particular chance to make a change that lasted ended. And
correct.
The one that confused me at first was when the tape disappeared. And I was like, well, how did she find it again when they got to the next scene? I'm like, okay, this is, there's some overlapping here and there's some shenanigans going on, but so far they do not irk me. So let's continue.
So for that, when the store burns down, you know, Laura had originally returned her tape to the wall. And so there was no wedding where she met Cooper. You know, and he gave her the tape back. So she, you know, got the tape back from his collection that was saved from the store that burned down. So he was able to salvage some of those things. When I was originally, you know, trying to explain the time travel aspects to our producers, to make sure that, you know, we had done our due diligence in the writing process, making sure that everything made sense, I actually had our art director, Jack, print out these maps of like our locations, like basically a map of Hawaii, and specifically Oahu. And I had this like red string that I would like puncture through a hole and say, like, all right, so if she makes a change here, and, you know, for instance, with Danny Glover, or with Cooper's house being, you know, someone else's house when she returns, she's basically traveling to a new track where she is now in someone else's house. But Cooper has experienced, you know, time travel with her already. But in a different sense, she leaves from that universe that he's experiencing her with, and the new Laura arrives seconds after the song ends. So it was a very complicated structure of strings and maps, and I had like multiple laminated maps to try to explain, you know, the logic about how, okay, well, if she's, you know, appearing here, but it's a different location, how does that work? So we spent a good amount of time, James and I, trying to make sure that the logic worked. And then, you know, it was a little bit easier to explain it, but it was still difficult to explain it to someone who doesn't understand time travel or understands the rules of how other time travel movies work.
Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining the great big cork board with index cards, push pins, and lots of string.
Huge. We had a lot. It was a huge cork board.
I hope somebody took a picture of that, because that would just be an awesome thing to include in a DVD.
I might have a photo around here somewhere.
Awesome. Awesome. So you mentioned that you had maps of Hawaii. This movie is set in Hawaii. You guys got some absolutely drop-dead gorgeous shots of sunsets and beaches and sunrises, and breathtaking. Talk about filming in Hawaii in some of these locations because you had to film many of these locations multiple times for different timelines.
Yes. So we had, you can probably remember a specific scene on the cliffs. That scene is, it's a very small window of time to be able to film a sunset, specifically Golden Hour. And, the team of filmmakers that I was working with, Luca and Dennis and all the camera department and, the actors, they killed it. Like we were able to do this, these two scenes back to back days in 20 minutes. Like that's
Wow.
unheard of. Like we were like, it was insane how much we were able to pull off because everybody was on the same page. They knew what the movie was tonally about, and making it look good, I guess, just comes naturally to Luca. He's got such a good eye for color and for contrast, depth of field. It's I'm jealous. He's quite talented. But yeah, so we filmed the cliff scenes, the two cliff scenes on back-to-back days. We were given 20 minutes because of Golden Hour, and we were able to pull it off. And it was just like one of those things where like you finish filming and you look at each other and you're like, fuck yeah, that worked so well. And then we got basically a tour of Hawaii because we got to go to different locations around the island, and being able to film in a location longer gave you kind of time to really absorb what the island was about, and being able to have multiple scenes that you needed to film in those locations gave you extra time to really understand. And so it was quite an experience. And it's one of those things that a mentor of mine told me, Joan Darling. She said, at the end of filming, she told me, "Now you're probably feeling really bad right now that this experience has come to an end. But the thing about it is you having the best experience that you've ever had are going to want to duplicate that again. And the fact that you're always going to try to duplicate that experience is going to be enough." And I can sit comfortably knowing that, that will be, that'll be incorporated in all the projects that I do, is trying to make sure that everybody has a good time, and we're a family making a project that just, it has to have the right emotions and, the right goal, but we'll all get there together.
Cool. Yeah, for me, one of the coolest indicators of changes in the timelines was the subtle changes in the mural that
Yeah.
Laura had, I'm going to say, covered up partially after the initial accident, and the subtle different changes that were appearing there based on what had changed. What she had changed or had not changed in the timeline. I thought
Yeah.
using that as a visual indicator, okay, we're in a different place now, was really, really cool.
That was our newspaper clipping from Back to the Future, basically. We needed some sort of indicator of how things were going, and there were since she's an artist, it just felt appropriate to do it that way.
So talk about actual filming. How much did you have to explain about, okay, this is time travel, don't think about it too much, you'll give yourself a headache, to the actual cast?
Well, everybody seemed to understand like what the story was about, and the logic was all there. And I think that, having an emotional story also helped aid in people wanting to understand what the logic was, because that gives, it gives like a reason to try to want to understand. Because if the story is really good and like the emotions are all there, you're then like feeling comfortable about maybe possibly learning something new, which could be time travel in this instance. But I think that, a lot of our cast, and also our audience members have probably seen, their fair share of time travel movies. And I think James and I tried to work that to our advantage with how we designed the logic in press play to be, because it wasn't too, I don't remember having too many conversations about like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Like maybe we should do something else. Most of the conversations are, about music, which is interesting. So, yeah. I mean, I guess, it's funny because I don't know how you would describe this film, but a lot of the people that I've talked to, they'll either gravitate towards saying, oh, this is a time travel movie, or this is a great romance. And then secondarily, you'll have to like say, oh, but what about this? What about the other side? And then they're like, oh yeah, no, it was great in that too. But it's some people think of it as a romance. Some people think of it as a time travel movie. And I think that makes me feel like James and I did it justice. So I don't know what you consider it, but being that we're on a sci-fi podcast, I think I have
Yes.
my guess.
I am a little bit biased. I consider it a romantic movie, a romance, but there's a time travel element that's in the forefront while the music is the emotional anchor.
I think that's a great descriptor for it.
And for the music in this, how long did it take to find the songs you felt it just imbued the scene with the right emotional level and emotional, I guess, connection, and also to get clearances for them?
Yeah, I mean that's a long process, the clearance process. Well, I'll give you an example of a specific song, which was, we went with it in the script originally, like the first draft, which I think I might have mentioned it before. It was a song by Robin Kester called "Day Is Done." Now, I originally found that song, I think in like 20, I want to say 2016, maybe 2015. It was posted on Reddit by someone. And I was scrolling through, and I think it was in R Listen to This. And I listened to it, and I was like, wow, this is such an emotionally powerful song. This kind of reminds me of like what Laura would go through 4 years later. Maybe I wonder if this person has their contact info. So I posted a comment and asked, hey, how does anyone have Robin Kester's contact info? And someone replied, and it was a former student of hers because she used to teach music. And so they provided me in a DM with her email, and I sent an email off to her explaining, probably over explaining, like what this movie was m meant to me, and like it would be wonderful if you could like let us have your song for this movie. And it stuck. And like there are certain songs that you can all agree on. Like, you can find a song and it has the right emotion for, and it works with the scene, and nobody doubts you for it. And that was one of those songs. Like she made an amazing song for, herself, but we can use that for the movie, and have it stuck around through the whole process. Didn't get questioned once. It was an amazing experience. So it takes a long time to write a script. It takes a long time to find songs that work for a film. I think that there's a benefit to knowing the story really well, that when you hear a song that it should be in a specific part of the script, because that's what happened a few times. Like the Father John Misty cover of The Flaming Lips, I remember seeing that on YouTube and being like, I wonder if they have like an actual recording of this. That would be amazing, because it looks like it's just an AV club like recording in a room where a bunch of bands have signed to the wall. And that one actually, I think he never released that version of the song because I don't think that he liked it. But when we asked him for his blessing for it to be in the film, we sent him a scene and he saw that and he was like, okay, like that can be good. So we got to have that one. So, like, huge shout out to Season Kent and Leah Harrison for helping us acquire those artists. And then, you know, it's also amazing that Japanese breakfast has kind of become a very popular name as well. Like that, I remember begging, like when we were in production office, I remember begging Season and Leah, hey, please reach out to Japanese Breakfast. I would love for them to be the band that plays on screen. It would be amazing. And then it just happened. Like
Wow.
there are a lot of those moments. There are a lot of those moments while we were making the movie that crew members who were local would turn to me and be like, you know, the weather isn't this nice all the time. Like you're getting lucky. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. It feels like this is atypical Hawaii to me. And they're like, you haven't been here long enough. And I was like, okay. Like for instance, that the scene where she paints over the mural and walks on the beach, that sunset was just candid. Like we didn't plan on shooting that sunset. Like we had just filmed her painting over the mural, a very emotional scene. And then I forget who it was, but someone was like, oh my God, look at the sunset. And then I was like, Luca, grab the camera. We're going over there. And then we're going to have her walk on the beach. And so we filmed that. So it was the film, you know, filming it, you know, it kind of it felt magical itself too. 'Cause like here you are in Hawaii making a time travel film, doing a job that you've always wanted to do. And everything just seemed to go correctly. And everybody was like, I don't know. It felt very comfortable. And like everybody would, every crew member that I talked to would say, like, it doesn't usually go like this. And I
Nice.
was like, wow, okay. Well, I'm gonna appreciate this. And
Cool.
then that's probably why, you know, at the end of the film, at the end of filming, my mentor was like, you should really, you know, position this in your mind this way, with, you know, trying to make sure that you experience a film like this, you know, try to recreate it. And, you know, that was very, very important, to reframe my mind that way.
Well, you'll be happy to know that in terms of romantic genre mashup films, this is now number three on my list
Oh,
behind
what's numbered one and two?
Needle in a Time Stack, which literally just
Okay.
came out last year, and Sliding Doors.
Okay, two films I need to see.
You do. Sliding Doors is at least 20 years old at this point. And
Okay.
Needle in a Time Stack, like I said, just came out last year, and it is brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Needle in a Time Stack
Yes, it's
and
based.
Sliding Doors. I will
Yes.
have to check those out.
And I think you will be happy to have your film in that company. So
I look forward to it.
are you working on anything new, and is there any like social media presence where people can keep track of your next project?
Sure. I'm on Instagram. My handle's SH35MM. It stands for Shaker Heights, which I'm a huge fan of Paul Newman, and also 35 millimeter film. So I made that handle. But I could see, you know, what I'm hoping to work on next is a studio film. But there is also, you know, an opportunity to explore a sequel to Press Play, which you know, I've talked with James about. And I think we would frame it a little differently than this film, but it would have a similar kind of you know, moral of the story. So those two, that type of thing is what I want to work on next. You know, I've gone through a bit of, you know, life experiences over COVID and writing and trying to get projects going, but I think I'd like to maybe explore the idea of Press Play as a sequel and what that would look like.
Interesting, very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, last quick question. Is the soundtrack for this film available as a playlist on like Pandora or Spotify?
I certainly hope so. I'm not aware, but if it is, I will find out for you and make sure that you know.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Greg, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your passion about this project. It is a very, very entertaining and compelling film.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
The movie is Press Play in theaters on digital and on demand June 24th. I suggest you go check it out, even if you are like me and you're kind of adverse to romances. It's a fun one. It's gorgeous as well. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Hi guys, this is Tom Allison, and I play Pree on Killjoys, and you're listening to A Slice of Sci-Fi.
And again, the movie is Press Play, available, should be now, in theaters, on demand, and digital, from our friends over at The Avenue. And like I said, I typically am not a fan of romances. Maybe it's just regular non-genre romances that I'm not having fun with. Who knows? It could be. Because as I mentioned in the interview, last year's Needle in a Time Stack, that was just a brilliantly done movie. And so emotional. And I don't know if I would have even watched that were it not for the time travel aspect. I don't know. I may have to sit and ponder that while I watch Needle in a Time Stack and Press Play again. Oh, but how about you? What are you searching for when you choose a romance or romantic comedy to watch? Do you need that genre element to make it palatable for your entertainment needs? Let me know. Give me a call. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. And you know, you can always hit me up on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi to have a discussion out in the world where multiple people can add their two cents whenever they wish. The website is also available, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by and leave a comment or ask your question in the discussion section. For this episode, you can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please consider leaving a review or a rating. Let folks know you are enjoying this podcast, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can also leave a rating or review over on Podchaser. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support Slice of Sci-Fi and all of the other podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep the lights on around here. So for that, I thank you. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will be eligible for perks. The Patreon perks we provide here every month, I pick a winning email address out of the hat of participants, of patrons, so to speak. And that person is eligible to receive a Blu-ray, a DVD, a 4K disc of many of the movies and TV shows I get here for review. And we have lots and lots of books as well, review materials for Writers After Dark. We have finished books, we have finished hardcovers, mass market paperbacks, trade paperbacks, and even trade copies of advanced reader copies. All of them are in need of new homes because I literally cannot keep all of them. But you, through your support of our efforts here, get first dibs at these items. So thank you again for your support. If you'd like to leave a donation every now and then, you can use Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/sliceofscifi, or PayPal, paypal.me/scifisummer. We are also in the process of rebuilding sliceofscifi.net as a sort of virtual shop, affiliate shop, a curated list of content, list of books and DVDs and TV shows, movies and TV shows on, yes, physical media. Still trying to figure out how the digital media works thingy. And any purchases made through sliceofscifi.net also go towards helping support efforts here. All the links are affiliate links, but it's all curated. Lists of favorite stuff of mine, of Noah's, of Darren's, of Claire's, of Lewis's. Things that they find entertaining, enjoyable, their favorites, their top fives or what have you. Those are going to be there eventually. So check it out. If you're interested in seeing cool stuff that we like, place again is sliceofscifi.net. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.